All right. Welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate, and that's Outer National with Decisions. And it's just that kind of day. It's that kind of year. It's that kind of whatever. It's that kind of life, because each and every one of us faces those kinds of decisions each and every day. And we got to decide what side you stand on. You got to decide what's going on, what you think about it. And you got to do stuff about it.
So with that thought, let's get into today's show. At the back end of the show, I'll be talking with James Tager, the Deputy Director of Free Expression Research and Policy at PEN America. And we're going to be talking about the political persecution of Memphis journalist Manuel Duran Ortega, an immigrant from El Salvador, who was arrested by Memphis police while covering an anti-ICE protest and then turned over to ICE, which now is threatening him with deportation. And before that, we'll hear All Played Out, a spoken word piece with words by Bob Avakian and music by jazz musician William Parker. And right now, I'm pleased to welcome to the show
Peter Stern. He's a senior reporter with the Freedom of the Press Foundation, and he's joining us to talk about the case of Mexican journalist Emilio Gutierrez Soto. And on July 26th, Gutierrez Soto and his son Oscar were released from an Immigration and Customs Enforcement ICE detention facility in El Paso, Texas. And there's evidence that Emilio was targeted for his criticism of ICE and the immigration system. Joining us to talk about all this is, as I said, Peter Stern. Peter, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Sure. Well, we're going to jump into this because I got so many questions. I'll let you know, man. I have 10 pages of questions for you, okay? What I was saying was, you know, didn't even really go anywhere near enough to describe what was actually happening with Emilio Gutierrez Soto. You explained that he's a Mexican journalist, and he and his son have both been wrongly locked up by an ICE detention center for about 7 months. And that this happened, this basically sort of came on to them out of the thin air. Nobody really expected this. Why did they go after him? What was going on here? Let's talk about that. Why did they go after him? What was going on here?
Well, I think we should start in 2008, because that's when he first came to the United States. He applied for asylum along with his son. So he was a journalist in Mexico. Among other things, he wrote about corruption in the Mexican military. And that did not make him a lot of friends in the Mexican military. He had reason to believe that his life was threatened. He had gotten threats. At one point, Mexican military police officers raided his house in the middle of the night with masks on and with automatic weapons. So he kind of knew he needed to get out of Mexico. And so he and his son came to the United States in 2008. They went to one of those ports of entry and they applied for asylum. So it's important to note, of course, that Emilio Gutierrez Soto and his son Oscar did not sneak into the U.S. You know, they did not come illegally. They came legally to apply for asylum. And at that point, Emilio was interviewed by a Customs and Border Protection officer and later by an asylum officer, and they found that he had a credible fear of remaining in Mexico when they recommended that an immigration judge review his case for asylum. So that was in 2008. When he initially came to the U.S., he and his son were separated and detained, like a lot of asylum seekers, for a few months before he was released on parole, while he was awaiting a ruling on his asylum case. And so that was in 2009 or so he was released, and it took years before a judge finally ruled on his asylum case. So between 2009 and 2017, he and his son moved to New Mexico and just kind of built a life. He got a food truck, and that's how he supported himself. And they were just living there. You know, they would check in with ICE occasionally, but generally speaking, they were free on parole. In July of 2017, that's when a judge finally ruled on his asylum petition. And the judge, despite the evidence that he and his lawyers had to show that he was in danger in Mexico, said that they did not believe he was a credible witness, that the Mexican government would be unable to protect him if he was sent back. And so his asylum petition was denied. And then he tried to appeal that ruling. And in the course of trying to appeal that ruling, he and his son went to a routine immigration check-in, you know, go to the ICE office and say, we are appealing this ruling. Can we have a stay of deportation until the court rules? And they expected that ICE would defer to the court and would not try to take action until the court had decided whether to reopen their appeal. And ICE had implied that heavily to their lawyers, that, you know, they would defer to the court. But of course they didn't. When they went for the ICE check-in, ICE agents immediately handcuffed them, put them in a car, and started driving them toward the Mexican border. And while they were being driven to the Mexican border, Emilio's lawyer called the appeals court and said, they're taking him, you know, we need an emergency stay of deportation. And the court said, you know, we'll call you back. And like an hour later, they said, okay, we ruled there's an emergency stay of deportation. And they let ICE know that ICE could not legally deport him. So instead, ICE decided to detain him along with his son. And that was in December of 2017. And they remained detained until July, just last month, when they challenged their detention. And a federal judge was going to rule on whether the government had a legitimate reason to detain him. And before they could make that ruling, ICE decided it was better to release him than to lose in court.
Tell me this, Peter, because it's really, you know, people have to be thinking about this a little bit and have a question like this. Why did they in particular go after him in the way that you're talking about, particularly after he's been here for so many years, and then he decided to come down and slam him? What was it that made him actually be a target for the system?
What's really interesting, and one of the most sort of powerful pieces of evidence that he and his lawyers have that he was specifically targeted, is an email from February of 2017 that like an ICE supervisor sent to ICE agents in El Paso, Texas. So this was before his asylum case was denied, because that was in July. This was February. He was on parole. You know, he was still awaiting a ruling. Nothing had really changed. But an ICE supervisor emailed ICE agents saying, here is a list of 2,718 non-detained individuals who could be candidates for arrest, like if they were going to do a sweep. And on that list, his name was on the list. And the question is, why was his name on the list if he hadn't done anything? You know, he wasn't a fugitive. He was just waiting for the asylum ruling. It still hadn't come down. So it suggests that for some reason, ICE was paying attention to him even before he lost the asylum case. So then the obvious question becomes, well, why were they paying attention to him? And when they tried to deport him in December, and when they couldn't deport him, they detained him. You know, they said, oh, well, we're just deporting him, we're just detaining him because he lost the asylum case. But clearly they were already targeting him before that, as late as February of 2017. And so he and his lawyer argue that the reason ICE was paying attention to him was because he was an outspoken critic of ICE, and he was a critic of the U.S. immigration system and the way that it would deny asylum to people. So, you know, he came to the U.S. in 2008. His asylum case was not ruled on until 2017. And over those 9 or so years, he would speak to the press and he would say things like, I think this is a broken system. At one point, after an asylum hearing, he said, we're talking about an immigration judge and an immigration attorney whose job it is to keep from expanding the abundance of people looking for protection because of the violence in Mexico. We don't have a country that accepts us with its laws and regulations, even after being aware that we fled Mexico because the Mexican state was persecuting us. After he lost his asylum ruling, he said of the immigration judge, he simply dismissed all the arguments, put them in the trash can, and denied the asylum. I feel very sad and I'm very disappointed in the immigration authorities, especially the policies that the United States exercises. In October of 2017, so after he had been denied asylum, while he was trying to appeal that decision, before he was actually deported and arrested, he received an award from the National Press Club, and he gave the award speech. And during his acceptance speech, he harshly criticized the U.S. immigration system, and particularly the asylum process. He said, those who seek political asylum in countries like the U.S. encounter the decisions of immigration authorities who barter away international laws. So he was clearly an outspoken critic of the U.S. immigration system and the asylum process and ICE. And so his lawyer and a number of press freedom organizations believe that he was targeted as a result of that. He made these criticisms. He made probably the most pointed criticism, the most public criticism, in October of 2017 when he accepted the National Press Club Award. And then it was only a few weeks later that he was unexpectedly detained and nearly deported.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, one of the things that really keeps running around in my head is that here's a guy, he came here, and he did basically everything that, you know, he wasn't hiding. He wasn't like hiding,
right,
in the, you know, and he actually did all these things that were required of him. And they came and they basically ripped him away and then basically piled a whole bunch of charges on him. And including, I mean, this thing that I guess, you know, you were talking about, and the people discovered that there was actually, it wasn't so much it was just sort of his bad luck, but there actually was a campaign that was going on against him and apparently many other people who were also cited by these various ICE fascists about who should be rounded up and who should be, you know, taken care of this way and that way. This is something that people really generally do not know about or understand that this is happening, not occasionally, but actually quite often.
And I don't think it's a coincidence that this email that was sent, you know, saying here are people who are not currently detained who could be candidates for arrest, that was sent on February 1st of 2017. So that was right after Donald Trump took office and signed a bunch of executive orders that, you know, changed ICE's priorities and basically let them go after whoever they wanted, as opposed to under the Obama administration when they were supposed to prioritize people who had actually committed violent crimes. So it kind of gave ICE the ability, it allowed them to go after people who they didn't like, even if they were not violent. And I think ICE took advantage of that by including him on a list. He was someone who they were probably watching because he was an outspoken critic. You know, he was someone whose case had gotten some public attention, and he was on their list, and now they could go after him. And he wasn't arrested in February of 2017 when he was on that list, because there was no reason to arrest him. There was no pretext. But after he lost the asylum case in July, then, you know, he was appealing. So while he was appealing, he probably shouldn't have been arrested or deported, but legally they were able to, and I think they took advantage of that. And it was only when they were driving him to the border that the appeals court was able to say, you know, he's in immediate danger of being deported, we're going to issue a stay and prevent ICE from removing him from the country, at least until we can rule on his petition to reopen the asylum case. And later, they ruled that the asylum case should be reopened, that it should be remanded to the original immigration judge, and that he should consider new evidence and make a new ruling. But while all of that was going on, even after the appeals court said, you know, no, his case should be reheard, ICE refused to release him because they were like, we might have a stay of deportation. We can't remove him from the country, but we can still detain him. I mean, that's just spiteful.
Mm-hmm. Tell me something, Peter. Have you been able to discern how many other people has this been happening to? Because I'm sure it's not just one or two or this one particular case, but how many other people are actually facing this similar situation?
Well, I think a number of people are probably facing similar situations. Obviously, since I'm a reporter at the Freedom of the Press Foundation, I primarily focus on journalists who are in this situation. But there are also many, many activists who, it's clear, have been targeted by ICE. But in terms of journalists, besides Emilio Gutierrez Soto, there's another journalist, Manuel Duran, from El Salvador, who was living in Memphis for years and just reporting on what was happening there. And a few months ago, he was reporting on an anti-ICE protest. And he was not protesting. He was just covering it. He was live streaming it and interviewing people. And a number of protesters were arrested for civil disobedience. They were sitting down in the middle of the street, and they planned to be arrested. And Manuel Duran was filming them. He was not planning to be arrested. He was just doing his job as a journalist, but he was arrested. And this is something that, you know, happens occasionally in the U.S. where journalists who are covering protests end up being arrested and charged with, you know, interfering with an arrest or trespassing, that kind of thing. So he was arrested, taken to the local jail, and then charges were dropped because it was clear he hadn't actually done anything wrong. But before he could be released from jail, ICE came, picked him up, and took him to an ICE detention facility, saying that he was an undocumented immigrant and he should be deported. So he's another journalist who is now in ICE detention, who they're trying to remove from the country.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking with some of the people that he works with that are working on his case, actually, which said it should be very interesting, too. We're running out of time, and I just want to make sure that we get this in, because where are things at now? I mean, it seems like, you know, it reached a certain point, but he also just recently had to go back to court, right?
You mean Gutierrez Soto?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so Gutierrez Soto, his immigration case is still continuing. So essentially, the appeals court said that the asylum case should be reopened. He's going to get another hearing. They're going to bring in new evidence that he was, you know, being threatened and persecuted in Mexico. And the immigration judge is going to have to rule on that again. In the meantime, though, he has been released from ICE detention, and he has a fellowship at the University of Michigan. So he's going to be going up there for a year-long journalism fellowship. And it's possible that the case will be moved from New Mexico or Texas up to Michigan. So he may get a new immigration judge. But it all comes down to what the immigration judge rules. If they deny him asylum again, you know, he'll have to appeal again. And if his appeal is denied, he could be deported. If he's granted asylum, then I think he'll be able to stay in the country, you know, where he's been for years. That's certainly what everyone who is following his case is hoping.
Mm-hmm. You know, and with the drive towards fascism that's being whipped up in this country, it seems to be a major struggle that's taking shape on that front. So I want to actually, Peter, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. And your web address is?
The web address is freedom.press.
So it's freedom.press. The web address is freedom.press. And I'll have that up on my Facebook page as well, right? And Peter, we'll have you back on the show soon to follow this, all right? It's a very compelling case and something that people should be outraged around. All right, so thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Michael.
Sure. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we have just been talking with Peter Stern, senior reporter with the Freedom of Press Foundation, and he joined us to talk about the case of Mexican journalist Emilio Gutierrez Soto. And actually, we're going to take a quick break, and I want you to listen to this, because this is something that, it's a song called All Played Out, and it features Bob Avakian singing it, and he's accompanied by William Parker, jazz musician William Parker. And Avakian is the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party, and he recorded this in 2011. Check this out, and we'll be right back after this.
All played out. We must broadly unite to carry out the fight to resist the crimes of this system. But on the real revolution is the only solution. So we need to call out things whose time has run out, which keep people in chains, suffering unbearable pain. These things are all played out. Capitalist vultures, big time and worldwide exploiters, preaching about personal responsibility, ranting about predators and criminality, terrorizing the youth in the inner cities, while you loot everywhere you see, slaughter people and rain destruction through crimes untold, all to enforce your rule and amass your gold on the backs of billions, chaining them in slavery new and old. Your time in history, it's gone. It's all played out. Puffed up stuff about the land of the free and the home of the brave. A country that built itself on bodies of slaves and ruthless genocidal robbery. That spreads its empire through plunder, driving countless people under with its bloody red, white, and blue rag unfurled. All this pompous nonsense about the leader of the free world. That's all laid out. Vicious politicians and mindless mobs. And threatening, hounding people driven from their homelands, growling and howling, speak English, go home, worthwhile in any tongue. It's the same old song they've always sung. Fade deeper in the shadows, suffer in silence while you slay. To create wealth we crave, it's our way, backed up by violence. This garbage is all laid out. People of privilege demanding their right to be a parasite, whining about how things aren't good like they used to be. Back in the day, when things were done in an even worse way, look you in the face, say it's not about race or keeping half of humanity down. But once you're in your place, if you're a woman or black or brown, what this is, it's all played out. Nigger, a homicidal epithet from days of slave ship nightmare. Plantation overseers with whips, lynch mobs, racist whites on power trips. Repeated still now by far too many, openly racist or hyped as hip and cool. Frat boys blasting rap, who do they think they fool? Nigger, a word that bites deeper than a frothing rabid beast, that shouts the horror of centuries, cruelty and brutality. A word nobody should want to use. A word that just can't be made good, even if a shout out to homies in the hood. This word and everything it stands for, it's long past time it be all laid out. Modern day Uncle Toms, respectable Negroes who squawk out voice, parrot lies of powers that be, packaged slander is the truth, never fail to blame the youth, even slam them as our worst enemy. Oh, you looking wannabe second class bourgeoisie, you're all played out. Reverends and the rest, not ones who really stand with the oppressed, but those who strut and preach to keep the people down on their knees, suffering indignity, who put the blame on those unfree for ways that they are kept in misery. Pompous, self-righteous asses who breathe contempt for the masses. Fools who worship the powers that be, insisting that things stay locked within the bounds of bargains with the bourgeoisie. All played out. Backward-ass athletes and entertainers wearing a cross, slavish symbol of submission, never making it their mission to use their position to help people rise up. Never raise a fist, but point a foolish finger to the sky, giving praise, helping to spread the lie that in this system you can make it if you try. So if you're poor and beaten down, it's you to blame, never demanding to know why. If some supposed God controls all this, so many suffer needlessly. Shame should be on such a God if it existed, but all this God talk is just twisted. It's all in God's hands, leave it to the Lord. Just help this system stay in power. When bowing down to lords and masters should be over, all this too is all played out. Falling for that game, caught up in those lies about Obama, how he's bringing peace and something really new. When he does the same as done before, still using torture, no better than John Hugh and that whole crew, waging unjust wars that never cease. You look the other way, time after time, day after day, at all the crimes against humanity under Obama's command and with his decree. He talks about getting beyond race. His is just a different face that covers all too familiar murder and brutality by sneering pigs who hunt down youth in inner cities. You should know this game is all played out. Elections, where if you're looking for a better world, no matter how you choose, yes, P.S., you lose. You're always left deflated and frustrated because the politicians and elections are cogs in a machine, part of a system that runs and rules by treating human beings and the earth as things to be exploited and despoiled. Believing the hype, putting all your faith in this bourgeois democracy, this lie of people's sovereignty, come on, it's all played out. Placing your hand over your heart, honoring the rag of U.S. imperialism, doing your part to prove you are respectable, will do only what's acceptable. Blood pledging allegiance to this flag, bowing down to this monstrosity that causes so much horror for humanity. All played out! I got my mind on my money and my money on my mind. That craziness about being like Scarface, acting without a trace of humanity, plundering and violating without remorse, killing and dying for no good purpose. Give it up! It's all played out! Men thinking it's their right to order women around and misuse them, to degrade and abuse them, talking all that talk about bitches and hoes. And if she's pregnant, she can't have an abortion because she should have kept her legs closed. Assertion of manhood or talk of protecting womanhood, which still means keeping women subordinated and dominated. All this garbage about women being less than man, less than fully human, that's all played out. Disrespecting people who love someone of the same sex, treating them as objects of contempt, dogging them, beating them down for being different. Religious tradition encoding oppression, authority invoked to enforce suppression of sexuality in forms that are outside the norms that are proclaimed natural and God-ordained. Norms that in reality enforce exploitation, perpetuate patriarchy and male domination. All this too is all played out. Shop until you drop. Buy, buy, buy. You are what you own. Your worth is what you purchase. I. Throngs gathering to scramble for the latest iToy rage, but not to resist injustice and endless outrage. All played out! Tabloid addiction and gossip slinging, treating as prominent what is really trivial, making what really matters seem invisible, acting like mobs in Roman arenas, sneering and snarking with a vicious demeanor, building yourself up by tearing other people down. All played out! Putting up with all this madness, even though you know it's wrong. Being passive, thinking how they want you thinking, acting just to get along, singing that old song, that though the crimes are terrible and massive, nothing can be done about this, nothing can change, because of human nature, things are bound to be this way. Revolution, that was tried and it failed. Communism, voice dissent, they'll haul you off to jail. Communism, they take away your freedom. We say that's just wrong. Plus there's a new synthesis. There are speeches, books with deep analysis, but you don't read them, won't hear them or go near them. You remain in paralysis. Like that, you're all played out. A so-called left that, to tell the truth, finds it frightening and distasteful to change the world radically at its root. Disgraceful. A left that is content with posing, devoid of rage or joy, its passion spent, deceiving mimic, miming what it claims to be opposing, rejects the path of revolution, insists there can be only one solution that is viable and desirable, reform within the confines of this system, change conforming to the dictates of this brutal order, talks forever of democracy, cover for dictatorship of bourgeoisie, politics of identity that really comes back down to me. If it speaks of socialism, it is tired out, dried up dogma, no reality, lacking fire, ferment, and conviction, impoverished imagination, lowered vision. The change it talks about is paltry fiction, lifeless, desiccated, can't lead anyone to be emancipated. A left like that is all played out. This whole damn system, root and source of all this madness, all played out. Rupture, advance, beyond all that, no doubt. Putting an end to this insanity, working for revolution to emancipate all humanity. That's what we got to be all about. All the rest that poses and opposes what cries out to be done, it needs to be over and gone. All played out.
All right. Welcome back, sisters and brothers. That was Bob Avakian, and accompanied by basically just a killer song, man. And it really gets me. It's Bob Avakian, accompanied by William Parker. All right. And Avakian's the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party. And he recorded this spoken word in 2011. Okay.
Now we're going to hear from James Tager on the case of Manuel Duran Ortega.
Last April, Manuel Duran Ortega, a journalist and founder of Memphis Noticias, a Spanish-language publication in Memphis, Tennessee, was arrested, charged, jailed, and then released into the hands of ICE, Immigration, Customs, and Enforcement. He remains in the ICE jail to this day. Here to talk with us about this outrageous assault is James Tager. James is the Deputy Director of Free Expression Research and Policy at PEN America. James, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. Let's jump into this because I got so many questions around this. It's such
sure.
an outrage. Let's start with how Manuel actually ended up in an ICE detention center in Louisiana.
Sure, sure. So as you mentioned, he was arrested on April 3rd of 2018. Manuel is a writer for Memphis Noticias, which is a media outlet which I believe he founded, which is a Spanish language media outlet that covers what's going on in Memphis. And in fact, Manuel has been breaking or at least leading a lot of the investigation for some of the major stories into issues facing the Hispanic population, including the immigrant population in Memphis. Issues such as, for example, the Memphis Police Department's kind of collaboration with ICE. He was covering basically a civil rights protest in Memphis, which was, I believe, you know, the 50th anniversary of a previous famous civil rights protest with Dr. King. And one of the issues that was being spotlighted was Memphis authorities' kind of collaboration with ICE, to the point where there was actually sort of this visual aspect of the protest where this protester dressed up as an ICE official was carrying a group of people who were representative of the people being targeted by ICE. So Manuel Duran Ortega, like many others, was covering the event, and as the protesters were crossing the road, one of the protesters was being arrested, and Manuel, like several other journalists, went to get video footage, at which point, essentially, the police told him to back up, and since he was essentially against a parked car, he wasn't able to get to the street, or at least that's, what... the argument has been, and this has been kind of validated by a lot of the video footage of it, that basically, Manuel Duran Ortega was technically on the street, but he would have had to go through a car in order to get off the street when the police told him not to. There were many other journalists and protesters on the street, and he was arrested. He was charged with disorderly conduct and obstruction of a highway. He was the only journalist arrested, and he had his press badge on him. And if you watch some of the videos, you will actually see protesters grab him after the police move to arrest him and yell repeatedly, "He's a reporter, he's a reporter, he's a reporter." And yet, he was the only reporter who was actually arrested. Now, it's really highly relevant to remember that at the time of his arrest, Manuel Duran Ortega was essentially leading a lot of the reporting that was critical of the Memphis Police Department and helped break some of the stories that they were kind of working with ICE. For example, last year he interviewed someone who said, "Well, gee, I had a friend who was arrested and then later turned over to ICE." Memphis Police Department actually contacted him and said, "We want you to take that story down." He refused. So fast forward to April 3rd, and he's getting arrested. And so he was arrested, and then the charges were essentially dropped within 48 hours. However, instead of him being released to return to his family, he was turned over to ICE, which started deportation proceedings against him. So this is a 1-2 punch. It's horrifying to imagine the feeling of leaving a jail cell and believing you would be able to go home to your family only to be basically taken into custody by another organ of the government, in this situation ICE, and being told that they're going to start proceedings against you to remove you from the home you've had for over a decade.
Now, tell me this. One of the things that actually came out of this, and you spoke to this somewhat, but it's, there's, in a very heavy way, it's sort of like it has all the markings of a pre-planned attack. And his attorneys argue that the content of his reporting did make him a target of the police, and that his arrest was sort of payback for what he had been doing. And the police are saying, no, 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 it was just, you know, hey, we were just trying to clear up a situation. He was causing a big ruckus, and we just had to remove him from the scene. And it's those two opposing things. But, you know, the idea that this is a pre-planned attack is pretty important for people to understand.
Sure, sure. Well, let me note a couple things about that. Number one is kind of the response to this allegation. That's often the allegation when either protesters or journalists at a protest are arrested, which is, oh, well, it was a big ruckus, which is why they used disorderly conduct and obstruction of a highway. And I do recommend that a lot of people go and watch the videos that are of this. There's one that is posted by Watch the Watchers, which my understanding is kind of a police accountability website. It's on YouTube. The other is you can go to Memphis Noticia's own Facebook, and Manuel Duran was filming the protest and essentially filmed the beginning of his own arrest, and you can watch it. And, you know, the idea that this is disorderly conduct, you know, that he was somehow maybe ranting and raving in the middle of the street is crazy when you actually watch the video. Manuel Duran had already crossed the street when he was arrested, and he was doing what any journalist would do. He was moving towards the site of where a protester was being arrested in order to get good video, which is part and parcel of what being a good journalist was. The idea that he was acting in some disruptive way is really off base. And the protest itself, eight protesters were arrested, and that's not necessarily what this conversation is about, but they crossed the street at the crosswalk. You know, I don't know a lot of disruptive, crazy protests that are making sure they're not even violating jaywalking laws. So the implication that this was some kind of rowdy protest and that Manuel Duran Ortega somehow acted not as a journalist but as some kind of agitator, any implication like that is just completely contradicted by the facts. Mm-hmm. He did what any journalist would have done, which was that he moved towards where the arrest was going on. And then, as we understand it, when he was told to back up, he couldn't walk through a car. Last time I checked, we don't have those superpowers, and he was arrested for that. And that is, of course, why the charges presumably were dropped, because the authorities realized they didn't really have the evidence to make even these kind of vague charges stick. You know, charges like disorderly conduct, charges like obstruction of a highway, these are public order offenses. By nature, they have to be a bit vague because police have to use their judgment in order to define what's disorderly. I mean, that's on some level subjective. But we as a society have to watch when that happens as closely as possible. Charges like disorderly conduct are an incredible tool to be given to any police department because of the natural subjectivity of it. Here, it just beggars belief to argue that Manuel Duran was acting in a disorderly way, that he was doing anything other than his job, which was to be a journalist.
Now, at the same time, ICE claims that they weren't really doing it. They were just sitting back wandering around, and they really knew that they wanted him somewhere in the back of their minds, but there was no collusion between them and the police. It was just sort of one of these things, and it just happened. If he hadn't been out there causing trouble, he wouldn't have been picked up because they were still looking for him in the forest somewhere.
Right. Yeah, there's been this argument. The phrase that was used, and I think it might have been, but I don't remember if it was the MPD or the IC used it, but they called him an immigration fugitive, which implies that he's kind of, you know, it conjures up these images that he's kind of jumping from house to house, and he's changing his name, and he's wearing a fake mustache. This is a guy who was operating as a journalist in his community for over a decade. He had his name on articles he wrote. He interviewed the mayor in 2017. When I think of fugitives, I don't think of a lot of fugitives running around interviewing the mayor. The idea that he was somehow difficult to find and that ICE just had this wonderful, massive stroke of luck when they found out that he'd been arrested really is pretty illogical when you consider that he was holding himself publicly out in the community for over a decade. And I will say this, you know, even if ICE received, you know, if the director of ICE in Memphis woke up and he had a dream and that's how he found out that Manuel Duran Ortega had been arrested and that ICE could start deportation proceedings, he would not have been brought in by the ICE but for the fact that he was arrested. So when we think about our constitutional rights, when we think about the First Amendment, our right to free speech, our right to a free press, this is a person who is being targeted for deportation because he was covering a protest. And that should alarm us, you know, as Americans, as people who cherish our rights, you know, regardless of what level of active collaboration was actually occurring between the MPD and ICE. Now, I will say this third point, which is that this is appears to be, or at least there's the possibility that this is part of a larger systematic targeting of people who are speaking out against ICE. You know, we have, and I hope I can shamelessly plug this later on, but we have a petition calling for ICE to release Manuel Duran Ortega, and it's making the rounds. And one of the things we thought about mentioning was an NPR report that occurred earlier this year that talked about how 20 different immigration activists had been targeted by ICE. We didn't include that in our petition because we wanted to point out that being a protester and being a journalist is two different things. Being an activist and being a journalist is two different things. But it's interesting that we're seeing a slew of people who, you know, are being targeted by ICE and that are vocally critical of ICE policies, and we're increasingly being told to wave away this as coincidences. And there's a couple other cases that come to mind. There's Emilio Gutierrez Soto, who was an asylum seeker, who was a Mexican journalist. He was arrested this past December. And we found out, it was reported, that he was on an internal ICE memo as being on a fugitive list, despite the fact that he was not a fugitive, he was an asylum seeker. We had a case of Marumora Villalpando, who you know, was kind of this immigration advocate, and there was an internal ICE memo that said, oh, and it should be noted that she's very active in anti-ICE protests. Well, why should it be noted that she's active in anti-ICE protests if those are, you know, our privileged First Amendment rights, as they happen to be? So we are increasingly being told to wave away all these things as coincidences. It's a coincidence that of all the journalists at this protest, the one journalist who was targeted was someone who's been on the record as being kind of critical of the MPD, Memphis Police Department, and its links with ICE, who has, you know, written a lot of embarrassing stories about the MPD. So one was one of his most famous stories was he broke the story that the Memphis Police Department essentially lost a body, that there was a shooting and that they impounded a van and there was a dead person in the van. I believe it was, you know, the victim of the shooting, and they just never found the body for weeks. And he was the one who broke that story. So what a coincidence, and I am putting the word coincidence in air quotes, that the one journalist who was arrested at this protest was a journalist who'd really made the Memphis Police Department look bad. And what a coincidence that ICE, that presumably was not actively looking for this man because Manuel Duran Ortega was very easy to find, that they got him, you know, moments that they got him days after he'd been arrested on charges that were ultimately dropped.
Mm-hmm. Let me remind listeners that you're tuned into the Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with James Tager. James is the Deputy Director of Free Expression Research and Policy at PEN America, and we're talking about the case of Manuel Duran Ortega, a journalist and founder of Memphis Noticias, a Spanish-language publication in Memphis, Tennessee. He was arrested, charged, and jailed, and he's still languishing in an ICE jail in Louisiana. Now, Manuel actually, I mean, it's interesting. I want to pursue this a little bit more because he actually made a video a year before his arrest that exposed the close working relationship between the cops and ICE in Memphis. And
right.
And the mayor was like, you know, just apoplectic about it. He was like jumping up and down, denying any collusion with ICE at all. And at the same time, you know, he brings this out. The cops are saying, oh, well, we were trying to save everybody's life. We were just trying to get things settled out. And they're arguing that they didn't do anything. And ICE is claiming that, you know, it was they weren't really looking for him, that he just popped up. I mean, here, you know, they said, oh, well, you know, he was a guy we were looking for at one point, but we weren't really looking for him at all. And they say he, you know, basically that it was just a matter of luck of him being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Right.
And it seems, what do you think of that?
Well, that's a really interesting and illuminating phrase, wrong place at the wrong time. Well, he was at a protest as a journalist. So if we believe that protests are somehow now magically the wrong place in the wrong time, last time I checked, protests are privileged expressions of our First Amendment rights. So, you know, if there is the belief that being a journalist at a protest is the wrong role at the wrong place at the wrong time, then I fundamentally reject that as a threat to our rights. I mean, let's remember that not only is the concern that Duran Ortega was targeted for his speech, but it affects our ability to listen, which is to say that Manuel Duran Ortega was breaking news stories that were important to the community of Memphis. So when journalists are arrested and then sentenced to deportation proceedings, or charged with deportation proceedings, rather, that's something that affects an entire community. There's not a million options for local Spanish language coverage in this country, regardless of what community you happen to be in. You know, I was reading one story where someone in the community said that Manuel Duran Ortega was like a lighthouse, that he was shedding light on issues affecting the Hispanic community in Memphis. And so this is something that really affects arguably everybody in Memphis in the way that it affects what stories are being told. So this idea of luck, oh, you know, he just got unlucky. When I'm interacting with a police person, I don't think to myself, gee, I hope I don't get unlucky today and get arrested for my First Amendment, rights. You know, I don't want journalists to be in this country thinking, gee, I hope I don't get unlucky today. And this concept of luck really undercuts the truth, which is that these organs, these departments, both the police officials and ICE, you know, they have discretion. For example, when ICE made a request that the Memphis Police Department hold Duran Ortega so that ICE could arrest him and start deportation proceedings against him, that's a request. That's voluntary. The Memphis Police Department has a choice whether or not to comply with that. And, of course, ICE previously would have had this guy marked as very kind of low priority. Now, the Trump administration has basically removed a lot of the discretion about that. But this idea that he was unlucky, well, it completely forgets that these are organs of the government that are making these decisions. And the idea that he was in the wrong place at the wrong time completely obscures the fact that the wrong place in the wrong time was actually a protest where people in the community were expressing their concerns and that he was acting as a journalist and covering that protest.
So where are things at now in Manuel's case?
Yeah, so my understanding is, and now might be an appropriate time to note that I don't have a legal relationship with Mr. Duran Ortega, so anything I state is not, you know, I don't represent him, sure, or anything like that. I'm just operating from the perspective of a free expression advocate, Pan America being kind of a free expression and press freedom advocate. So if I misstate anything about the legal proceedings, you'll have my apologies. But my understanding is that his deportation proceedings have been stayed, and there are currently hearings to see whether he even can be deported, in the sense that it's worthwhile to recall that basically he is from El Salvador. El Salvador is a tremendously dangerous place to be a journalist. And he left El Salvador in the middle of the last decade because he'd been receiving death threats in connection to his journalism. So there's a very legitimate concern that if he's deported, that he'll be, you know, that he is under threat, that he'll be targeted, that his life will be in danger in connection to his previous work as a journalist, or, you know, possibly in connection to the work he might take up there as a journalist. As well, there's a habeas petition to get him out of detention. He's still in detention. The Southern Poverty Law Center, which is a wonderful group, is leading a lot of the charge on that. And, of course, there's all these wonderful local advocacy groups in Memphis that are getting the word out and expressing to people in the community how problematic this really is.
Mm-hmm. I got two more quick questions for you. There
sure
is wide support among journalists and others across the country. There's been all kinds of statements that have been put out. Speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, certainly I think hopefully there could be even more support than there has already been. You know, at a time when there's millions of Americans who are particularly concerned about the state of the press, the independence of the press freedom in our country, this is an important example. And it's just so core to the work of a journalist. He was arrested for doing journalism, for covering a protest. So I think it's not surprising that a lot of journalists really connect with that and resonate with that, because they realize that this is core to kind of their identity, this is core to their work. You know, he was arrested for doing the job, and any journalist can kind of recognize that concern in their own work. So I think that helps explain why journalists around the country have been responding to that. Of course, certainly I think it would be wonderful to receive even more response. We've received a lot of outrage from some of the statements of the Trump administration, for example, that have called journalists the enemy of the people, which of course is absolutely justified outrage. But this is action where a journalist has been targeted and has really been subject to what I call a 1-2 punch. He was arrested, and then from the arrest, basically moments after the charges were dropped, deportation proceedings were started against him.
Mm-hmm.
So this really is, on some level, a worst-case scenario for a journalist who was targeted for doing journalism.
Mm-hmm. Now, one final question. The idea that immigrants do not deserve to have human rights in this country, this is dangerously setting in as the law, almost.
Yeah. So first of all, I mean, it's not legally accurate. First Amendment rights are not confined to citizens. And, you know, morally, I just think it's such an outrageous claim that if we believe that people should have freedom of speech, then we can't ever voice the belief that, well, only Americans should have freedom of speech. I mean, if you believe that we have freedom of speech because it's something that morally we should have, because it's our God-given right, because it's the appropriate relationship that citizens should have with their government, if you believe any of those things, not only that citizens should have with their government, but that people should have in the areas they're located. I mean, Manuel Duran Ortega had been living in Memphis for, over a decade. He had significant connections to the community. He was doing important work, kind of illuminating for members of the community what was going on. You know, if you believe that the ability to speak truth to power, to speak without fear that you're going to be targeted for your opinion, that should be limited only to citizens, that's such a strange view of why we have freedom of speech. It's a view that kind of rejects any belief that freedom of speech is a moral good, that we should have it by virtue of being human beings. Here, and again, it's worth pointing out that we have freedom of speech not just so other people can speak, but so that we can listen. Manuel Duran Ortega was breaking important stories. The outrageous story I pointed to earlier, it was a case, I think, the man's name was Bartolomiano Perez Hernandez. This was a man who was killed and then just spent weeks decomposing in the back of a van that the police had in their custody without the police apparently realizing that they had a body, while his family was kind of waiting for the body to show up so they could give him proper burial. And that's a shocking story. That's a story that's relevant to all members of the community, regardless of your citizenship, regardless of, you know, your race, class, or religion, regardless of what type of person you are. It's something that should affect you as a human being. So when we say, well, gee, only citizens should have certain constitutional rights, we forget how that would degrade the fabric of our civic life in ways that we may not immediately appreciate. But overall, both legally and morally, the claim that only citizens have First Amendment rights is something, you know, I categorically reject.
And of course, Trump's great declaration that, wait a minute, only we are actually human beings.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Certainly, kind of the lifting up of American citizens at the expense of other groups, beyond kind of just being this general offensive concept, just completely misstates how our communities work nowadays.
All right, James Tager, thank you very much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right, that was James Tager, Deputy Director of Free Expression Research and Policy at PEN America. And we've been talking about the threatened political deportation of Memphis journalist Manuel Duran Ortega. Now, I want to share a thought with you about the cases of Manuel Duran Ortega and Emilio Gutierrez. One of the crucial elements to understand about what's going on today is that the Trump-Pence regime is a fascist regime. They are seeking to put in place a fascist form of rule and all that means, including assaulting the rule of law and gutting any kind of civil liberty protection. A current centerpiece of this is the ethnic cleansing of immigrants, especially Latino immigrants, an effort to make America white again. As the organization Refuse Fascism has said, first they came for the Muslims, then they came for the immigrants. The attacks on journalists like Manuel Duran Ortega and Emilio Gutierrez, as well as the many activists that my guest mentioned, has to be understood as part of this. And that brings us to the end of yet another show. I want to thank my assistant producer, Henry Carson, my production assistant, Jeff Pryor, and my engineer, Gary Baca. If you want to write to me, you can at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. We're going to go out now with Break the Chains from Lupe Fiasco. Talk to you again next week.
I waited all my life to play, but I still can't find a way. But if I work it one more day, I might just break the chains. I might just break the chains. I might just break the chains. That especially where we from, where we grew up like a green thumbs, like a criminal, the only thing you could become. Look at what I became, something like a phenom, nothing but a G-thang. Things I've seen when I'm looking out of these frames, pictures I painted on the walls where we hang. From the trees we hung, strange fruit man, look at how we swung. How the hell you gonna tell a son who ain't have a father how to try to grow up and be one? Feel it in my bones and I'm sitting on the throne like a killer with the chrome. When I'm spitting out the poem, shed a whole lot of light on a little bit of home. Bam. I don't write no more, cause all up on the top, I shaved the brains to stay sharp, man, I knew how to raise a blade. I paid my dues, now I wait for change. Look at the flow so rude, it goes without us. Lupe, I'm Sucre, I ate the brakes. Quick to cut off any baggage, like some samurai, I like to travel light. I'm gonna leave you at home, Delilah. This is Samsonite. No case for the police, and no killers, I never seen them. Don't face on the top of